Welcome to your Problem Corner. Right here on KFAR 660 AM. News and conversation also available at 97.5 FM. Thanks for coming on board and joining us today. Your show, that's what Problem Corner is all about. Not necessarily about my viewpoint or my my opinions. I will sound off a little bit now and then, but for the most part, this is about what you guys want to talk about. I will tell you that today I've got a great guest that we're going to enjoy talking to, and that is Representative Larry Shaw. He's from District 26 down in Anchorage. Now, you folks in the interior may not know the history of Larry or the district that he represents, but this guy is he's a fighter. He's a ex-Vietnam era Navy SEAL. Well, I guess you're never an ex-Navy SEAL, retired Navy SEAL. He's gone through two governmental bureaucracies, worked inside the state government, and he jumped into the race here a couple of years ago and is in there representing his district in a big way. And he's got, I think he's kind of reached his threshold for some of the baloney that we see going on down in Juneau. And we invited him on the program today to discuss it. And he joins us right now. Good morning, Representative. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. Standing by for Liberty Base Free Thinkers.
Well, Liberty Base Free Thinking Radio is my show. We try and tone it down a little bit here. We don't want to scare all the straight people here on Problem Corner. So we're going to,
we'll have a little common sense then.
We'll have a little common sense. That's right. So I wanted to talk a little bit just so that people can get a feel for what happened down in Juneau in the last couple days of the session. We talked about it briefly on Problem Corner here after it went down. And this, of course, was the machinations behind the scenes with leadership on the Senate side of the conference committee specifically, where they tied the COVID virus funding to the three-quarters vote and voting for the budget. They also tied the PFD to where if you wanted the $1,000 PFD, you had to do it. If you voted against the budget, then you'd only get a $500 PFD. And finally, they whispered in the ears of some of the Mat-Su delegation that if they didn't toe the line and do what they were told, that their road project, specifically one road in particular, which I'm concerned about because I live on it, is Kinnick-Goose Bay Road, which is the most dangerous road in the state, if not one of the most dangerous in North America. I mean, 10 people have died on it in the last 5 years that I've lived on it. It's finally at the top of the stip. It's going to get its expansion that it needs to for the traffic that it gets. And they were told if they didn't toe the line that project would be pulled off the stip. And this kind of coercive nature. Give us a rundown here the last couple days of the session as you guys in the minority, in the House minority, were being dealt these hands and how things went about it.
Well, I must say that when you get cornered like that and it's almost as if it's a blackmail option. You can either take it or leave it, or we'll let you take the heat, or we'll let you pay the cost of the decision that you make. It's pretty tough. And then when you've got folks that have districts where those projects literally save lives, will make a difference in their community, you hold that hostage. I'm telling you, it was extortion. It literally was extortion. And the majority will say, well, we were trying to compromise. Well, they compromise among themselves. I don't have anybody coming to me and saying, hey, Laddie, what do you think? How can we help you? Or how can we come to a middle ground? Nobody came to me and did that.
And I mean, I got to say, I understand locking the dividend into this. I mean, because that's kind of politically, it's fair game. I mean, it is what it is. I don't think it's right, but it was, that's just kind of politics. But when you start talking about taking the COVID funding, where Alaskans are in lockdown, they're people have died, people are very scared, there's a lot of uncertainty. People are, they're without jobs, they're waiting on this government unemployment and everything else, and all these monies are tied up, and they hold those hostage. To me, I'm going to use my opinion here. It's despicable. It's totally despicable. And I find that it offends me at a base level. Can you talk to us about the last day as you got down to the vote? I mean, what you guys were told? I mean, I'm assuming that there were protests over what they were trying to do amongst the colleagues, but they just kind of looked at you and said, that's just the way it is?
huge protest. In fact, we got together as a caucus. We knew this was coming down the pike. And the thing that we, you and I had met, talked about earlier, and the thing that you have highlighted right now, that the dividend definitely was a political issue, and that's going to be out there. But they blended emotional, heart and soul legislation when we consider the COVID-19 funding with politics, emotions and politics. It was hurting people because there were people who were going to have to make decisions on not only reelection, which is important to us in the minority to try to become the majority, but it's important for the representation of their constituents. So you're holding funding on one side, affecting the entire state, against a dividend, against transportation projects, and they're right there up front. So you can't bypass them. When you say yes or no, you have to be very considerate of that. And at midnight, those things become very temperamental. They become very close to your heart and soul. And there were folks that had to make a decision on a yes or no vote relative to either not only so much the heat they were going to take, but the true representation of their district. Now, they were going to take heat in the minority. You were going to take heat if you voted no, because if the three-quarter vote did not go through, then we lost some COVID-19 funding. Also, potentially lost those transportation projects. By the time 1:30 in the morning came around and everybody had to push that green or red button, I'm telling you, people's emotions were drained. There were people almost coming to tears having to vote yes, because they knew how much pain was going to have to come out because of that yes vote. For those of us that voted no, we said, you know what? Somebody's got to take a stand here. Somebody's got to stand on the no value.
Right.
Because if the majority wins all the time, then there's no value in having the minority here. If we know that the votes are always only going to be 30 for two-thirds or three-quarters, whatever the numbers are, and or 21 in the majority, why even be there? Why even give your vote if you know what the outcome is going to be? So that three-quarter vote was going to be very painful because 30 votes was going to make a difference. And as you noted, Colleen Sullivan Leonard was taking a deep breath on her vote, and she asked that she told the speaker that she was thinking, and he wanted her vote, and she pushed the green button, and it was tough.
Yeah. No, I mean, that was an interesting, if you watch that on Gavel to Gavel, you could see hers was the last vote, and the speaker was asking her, and she said, I'm thinking, because this obviously was a very hard situation, and really no remorse or no even abashedness by the majority in the way that they did things on this, and it really is troubling to me. And I think it speaks to a much larger issue, which I think we're going to get into here in the next segment, which is this idea that somehow, some way, people who have experience, years of experience in the legislature, who've been there for a long time, who are senior legislators, that they somehow know more, know better, and are somehow intellectually superior than, well, the general public at large, obviously. We're going to talk about that next as well. But I think it's part of this problem that I call the nouveau riche nobility. And we're going to have that conversation with Laddie Shaw here in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. We'll continue after the bottom of the hour. We're going to take some of your phone calls, and I want to get your reaction to this in this discussion. And that's coming up here in just a few moments. You're listening to Problem Corner right here on KFAR 97.5 FM and 660 AM. News and conversation on the heartbeat of Alaska. I'm Michael Dukes, filling in for David Pruse during the COVID crisis here. We'll be back with more and Representative Laddie Shaw right after this. Okay, we're in the break right now, commercial break. Got some folks here on Facebook. Tyler says, I wish Laddie was my rep. So do I. Actually, I got a pretty good rep, but she's going to be gone here. She's going to be gone here pretty quick, and I do kind of wish Laddie was my rep. I mean, we need somebody with a little bit of fire in the belly, and I don't know as we're going to get around to talking about that part of it, Laddie, but we talked about it earlier this morning, this fire in the belly to finally just come out and tell the truth, to be a truth teller. to talk about the actions of people and individuals, and to place names with faces, names with actions, not in a, again, not in a finger pointing way and in an ad hominem attack type way, but to say, you know, legislator X did this, and here's why that's bad, and here's why it needs to be stopped, or here's why we need to resist that. I think it's important because people just don't pay attention. People, you know, the vast majority of people are so busy living their lives, they have no idea how the legislature functions, how state government works. And unless we can shortcut it for them and give them some cliff notes, as it were, to say, you know, this person doing it wrong, this person doing it right, unless we can give them some helpers, and I've had that request on the show many times, name the names of people that we need to work with or vote against in your opinion so that I can get a guide, unless we're able to actually name those names and talk about it outside of, you know, off the floor, I don't know how we're going to fix this problem.
I don't either. I think where we're sitting today, we are truly reaping the consequences of decades of poor fiscal management.
Yeah.
And we're playing catch up. We had, again, talked earlier about how much has been spent and how little has been resolved. What little to show for $12 or $13 billion over the last 5 years, and still having the debt we do, still having the problems we do. We talk about the permanent fund and its rainy day value. I'm telling you, today, it's definitely raining. I mean, it's pouring out there. People are hurting. And the consequences that we're seeing from that poor fiscal management right now, they're as unpleasant as you could possibly imagine.
Right.
We're in the middle of a health crisis. And, you know, Alaskans know the value of life and health and safety. It's a priority. It's a top priority for all of us right now.
Right.
The COVID-19 concerns, the restrictions that have come about from it, the negative impact on jobs and our economy. It's a rainy day, Michael.
Yeah, it's raining. It's pouring out there right now, laddie. All right, hold the line. We're coming back to a short commercial breaks here for Problem Corner. We're going to jump back in. Do me a favor, like this video if you can. Like it, share it, let other people know that it's a good conversation, and we'll get out here. Here we go, back to the air. All right, welcome back to Problem Corner right here on KFAR. I'm Michael Dukes, filling in for David Prus. He will be returning once the shelter-in-place orders have been lifted and everything else. I'm just taking care of it now from my home studio in Wasilla. Meanwhile, we've got on the phone with us right now our guest, Representative Laddie Shaw from House District 26. Laddie, I was just talking before we went to break about real, you know, part of the real problem is this attitude amongst legislators in general, it seems like, that they know better than us somehow, you know, in pretty much everything, but especially when it comes to how to spend our money. And nothing proves that more than this latest opinion piece from Andrew Jensen over at the Alaska Journal of Commerce. He's the managing editor of the journal, and he writes an op-ed that came out yesterday talking about how finance co-chair doesn't trust rural Alaskans with an early PFD. And he's quoting Jennifer Johnston in this, where she basically says she just doesn't. Have you ever been to the villages at dividend time? I just don't trust those people with that amount of money. It will just overwhelm her. It's too much money for them to have. And this is part of this attitude that you and I have talked about, where it's really a new nobility. It's a new noble. We got rid of the class system many, many, you know, moons ago when we founded America, when we came over here. You know, there was no more noblemen and peasantry or yeomanry. It was just people. But now we've got this kind of whole new nobility where people, elected politicians especially, think that they somehow have been ordained from on high with knowledge that us normal folks just wouldn't understand. That's a real problem.
It is a problem. And that comment from Jennifer Johnson, I'm surprised that her colleagues from the Bush haven't really come back and said, who are you talking down to?
Right.
And a bit of the problem with people like her in leadership and thinking that they are the know-it-all, that maybe we should stop and listen to ourselves, because we don't know it all, but I tell you what, the condescending attitude that the leadership, it just infuriates me.
Yeah.
But when I go back to the conference committee and I see six people, it literally four of those six people making a decision on behalf of the entire legislature, the entire body, and then it coming over to the House majority, which they stand in a binding caucus. They're all sheep.
Right.
They just follow the leadership. And another thing that drives us nuts, especially in the minority, is you're supposed to have a voice. You're supposed to have a vote. And those are supposed to be meaningful considerations for the state of Alaska and for your district. And those votes and those voices as a whole don't mean anything because you've got four or five people in leadership making the decision for the entire body.
Right. And we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, this whole idea of Mason's rules and ruling things out of order and stuff like that. I mean, the rules are supposed to be to protect the minority from the majority and to protect decorum and all this other kind of stuff. But when you have somebody who is essentially, you know, dictatorial from the speaker's chair, who has the bully pulpit, who can violate the Mason's rules, be called on it by a member of the minority, and then put it to a vote of the body to say, well, do you think that I broke the rules? And he has this binding caucus lockstep majority that will give him 21 votes every time. You can break the rules with impunity and still have the cover of the law or the rules on that case. I mean, you could say, well, did I break it? Nope, they said I didn't. So there you go. And just hammer away at the minority, basically rendering them, you know, ineffective, ineffectual.
Oh, boy, I tell you what, you walk out of there, sometimes I feel like a eunuch.
Yeah, exactly.
After 21 votes have just taken place, and we know that they were wrong, but they literally follow that binding caucus well off just the budget scale. They vote yes on everything that comes in their direction without thought. Their fingers just go straight to the yes button when it comes to following the majority's lead. And I mean, I talked to other folks and I said, why don't you think for yourself? They said, well, you know, we sort of get pressured into this, making this vote or there'll be consequences. You know, that's between me and them. And I said, you know, take a vote. They didn't hire you. They can't fire you.
Right.
Yeah, but they'll take my committee chair or they'll take something from me.
Right. Well, this is the problem, again, with the binding caucus. This is the extortionate component of the binding caucus that Mike Schauer and I have been talking about, that I've been talking about for years, and that Mike Schauer is finally doing something about, where they basically extort you for your vote the minute that you show up. That, you know, you get the phone call the second that you're elected, or even before in some cases, to say, hey, will you join the binding caucus? If you do, we'll give you all this cool gee whiz fancy stuff, and we'll give you offices and staff and everything. But if you don't, we'll put you in a broom closet in the basement, and you won't move any bills and everything else. But you've got to vote for this bill, which we haven't even created yet. You've got to promise us your vote on this bill. I mean, that's almost the definition of extortion.
On that note, you could run the entire state government with six people because of that binding caucus.
Yeah, absolutely.
You could literally, let's say it's at the House and you've got 40 members, you could set 34 people aside and six people will make the decision on behalf of the 34 because the majority of them, all you need is 21 votes, and they're going to follow along on a regular basis. You might as well discount everything else because those 4 to 6 leaders are going to make a decision on your behalf. Your vote has no value. Your voice has no meaning.
Isn't it safe to say that there are literally 5 or 6 people that run the entire state at this point?
Without question. Without question.
And the problem is that most average Alaskans are so busy working, you know, making a living, doing things like that, they don't understand the intricacies of, not that they couldn't, but they just haven't taken the time to understand the intricacies of how government works and how the process is and everything else. And so they don't understand this. When you explain the binding caucus to people in plain language like I just did, they go, well, that's not right. Yes, I know, but that's what's happening. And we are the only state in the United States that allows. Colorado has said that it's unconstitutional. I mean, there's language in the swearing in language in, I think it's Louisiana or Oklahoma, that says specifically you will not bind or promise your vote for anything. I mean, these things are, you know, other states have already run this course, and it has allowed us to basically, well, we drain the CBR all through the power of the binding caucus.
We allow 10% of the political base to control 90% of the voices and the votes.
Yeah, that's pretty much the bottom line. We're down to the last 3.5 minutes here. So, Laddie, What is your exhortation, your pitch to the people out there as they watch what's going on? You know, they're feeling frustration. You know, I mean, you're feeling frustration, obviously, but they are as well. So what is your advice to people here in the interior or around the state when it comes to, you know, what do we do over the next 4 or 5 months? What's the battle plan here?
The hardship is getting people to run for office. And if there are people listening, if there are people that are involved in politics, and then that's going to be about 2% of the population, get out there and try to get someone who has strong conservative values, someone who has a good, straight, strong backbone to run for a political office against someone who feels like they are part of nobility, someone who is making decisions not on your behalf necessarily, but on the behalf of them individually, them personally. There are egos and there are power players down there that are causing disruption and discontent in the entire process. But Michael, it is so demanding. As much as you and I talk, the preacher to the choir, it is hard. Politics is not the weak of soul, the weak of heart, or the weary of soul, as I had mentioned earlier. It's demanding. I mean, tell you what, it's like nothing I have ever been through in my entire life. I'm 71 years old and I still got a lot of energy, but politics just sucks the blood out of your system.
Right. The juices, the marrow from your bones and the juices from your vigor. I mean, I'm with you, man. I'm with you. I mean, I've been watching this for 20 years and I've been railing against some of this stuff for 20 years. And you're a better man than I am because I know people have encouraged me in the past. Oh, run for the legislature, run for the House, run for the Senate. And I'm just like, I'd be in jail because I would just throat punch somebody over something like this. Cause I've reached that point of where I have no patience for the chicanery that we're seeing in some of this, the disingenuousness. I'm sure that if I ask some of these leaders, you know, well, why did you, you know, tag the COVID? Well, it's just politics. We're just trying to do what's best for the state. You're just doing what's best for you and your power base. That's what you're trying to do.
And there's the catch 22. You asked me what I could do to help ourselves is find somebody that has the strength of character to run for office. And then on the other side of the page, if you give me 2 minutes, I could talk you out of going running for politics because
right.
It's so demeaning, so demanding.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Damned if you do it, damned if you don't.
It's a frustrating, frustrating situation. And I really appreciate the work that you're doing. I appreciate the fact that you're a straight shooter, that you're no nonsense. I like it when you get a fire in the belly, and I hope that you stick around with that. Hold the line for just a second. Representative Laddie Shaw, our guest for today on Problem Corner, representative for District 26. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what Representative Shaw said. We're also going to talk about this story in the Alaska Journal of Commerce, and I'm going to get your thoughts on it because this story is so blatantly astonishing in its just boldness and its just brashness that if you're not upset by it, again, you might want to just turn off the radio and go get a checkup from the neck up. We're going to be back with more. Don't go anywhere. It's Problem Corner right here on KFAR 660 AM. News and conversation also at 97.5 FM and on the web at KFARradio.com. All right, coming back for one final bite at the apple here with Representative Laddie Shaw. We got just a couple minutes here during this break. I'm going to go back and... I'm going to go back here and ask a question. Laura Reinbolt's in the chat room, Laddie, and she says, did the administration put pressure in any way on minority Republicans to vote yes on supplemental or budget or reverse sweep? I just for clarification, I've heard this from several corners that there was some pressure put on by the administration. Can you verify, deny, have no, you know, tell us what your experience was?
Well, no word came to me on that, but just prior to going in for the vote, Lance Pruitt had gotten word that I was going to vote no. He took me aside and said, I heard you were going to vote no. And I said, yeah. I finally sat down. I gave it some deep thought, and I'm voting no. And he took a deep breath, sort of a sigh, and he said, okay. Because earlier when we had our caucus meeting, he was saying, you know, I'm not going to hold anybody yes or no vote against them for any reason. So I had no read between the lines, no information that I was searching for, nothing out of the ordinary, and I walked away. But when I saw that deep sigh that I was going to vote no, there was something that caught hold of me, and I'm thinking, there's something going on here. But I had no knowledge of anything.
Right. So there may have been some questions. Governor Dunleavy may have been putting some pressure on someplace that, we could see the writing on the wall on this. Well, we're going to have to see how this goes. Laddie, as always, my friend, I can't thank you enough. I can't thank you for your service, anyway, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate everything that you do here in the state. Stay strong, my friend. I heard some rumblings about something in your district that you may be making a change, but I'm not going to put you on the spot on that. But I want to know. I want to be the first person to know. Let's put it that way. So keep me in the loop. All right.
Will do, my friend. Thanks for the call.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much, Laddie Shaw, representative from District 26. All right. Wow. Just freaking wow. Laura or Mike Schauer need to be considered as Senate president, says Harold. And I could not agree more. I think either one of them would make an excellent Senate president. I would like to see somebody who really has a fire in the belly, a respect for the rules, a respect for the rule of law, and so much more. So definitely, I am definitely down with that. I cannot. I'm definitely not opposed to that situation. All right, folks, where are we going here? Let me clear some of my phone is freaking out here. I'm trying to answer text messages. Oops, and I missed that. my buddy John says, ask Representative Shaw if he supports the Alaska study industry. All our problems can be solved simply by studying stuff. Thank you. Yes. Yes, John. As the president of the Alaska study industry, I see that you approve of that message. So that's all good. All right. Let's see what else we're going to do. We're going to take some phone calls. And we're going to jump into this here in just a moment. Do me a favor, if you would just share this show with your friends on Facebook. It'd be a good opportunity for them to get a little taste of me without getting the full taste of me, if you know what I mean. It's a nibble. It's a lick. That's weird. No, but, it's just a small, without me going full hog wild on them. Share the show. Also, like the video if you want to help out. You can like this video. That'll help it get more views and reviews out there. Thanks for coming in and joining us. We're about 20 seconds out right now, and we're going to jump back into it with more phone calls and everything else right here on Problem Corner, KFAR 660 AM. Thanks for being part of it. And thank you to all the Michael Duke Show listeners for helping out and continuing with us today. I really appreciate that. Here we go. 5 seconds out. Jumping in. All right. Welcome back to the program. It is Problem Corner right here on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM. News and conversation on the heartbeat of Alaska. I'm Michael Dukes, filling in for David Pruse. Problem Corner, of course, is your show where you get a chance to sound off. It's really supposed to be like the local watering hole, the local water cooler or coffee pot discussion where Fairbanksons come together and talk about the issues that they care about. I was going to talk today about the new borough budget, $175 million. When I left 5 years ago, it was at $143 million. Now it's $175 million. The mayor wants to add 6 more positions, including a trash enforcement officers, trash code enforcement. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, there is a crazy amount of stuff going on, especially in this time of crisis. It makes no sense whatsoever. But we're not going to talk about that today because this juicy morsel popped across the electronic transom. And I cannot not talk about this. So the phone lines are open right now at 503-298-4540. 503-298-4540. If you would like to sound off, I would love to hear your opinion on this. The Alaska Journal of Commerce, managing editor Andrew Jensen, wrote a opinion piece that's in right now talking about Representative Jennifer Johnston. The opinion piece is Finance Co-Chair Doesn't Trust Rural Alaska with Early PFD. And I'm going to get into the details of this, but since I have a phone call, I thought, well, why not? We'll take the phone calls because it's your show. We'll go over here. Good morning. Who's this? You're on Problem Corner.
Yeah. Hi, Mike. This is Richard.
Hey, Richard. What's on your mind?
Hey, it's great to hear you on KFAR. I like this. And I guess my opinion on that story is, you know, you've been fighting this for years of getting our full PFD. So how could I say it? It doesn't surprise me at all that this is their true feelings. I think we established that back with you and Mike Schauer fighting for that full PFD, right?
Right. Right. No,
I did want to mention.
Go ahead. I'm sorry,
Mike, that I've been reading this Journal of Commerce. They've had a couple good articles about the state of finance just in general. Right.
Right.
With the tourism oil double whammy. And I don't know. I actually kind of wanted to ask you what, because I know the numbers change. The formula is not set. So you can't just say the price of oil went down by half. Our revenues went down by half. That's not accurate. But I have had trouble finding what the real numbers of decline in our revenue and what the budget shortfalls currently are. Where do we really stand with how things are going currently?
Where it goes currently right now, and these numbers are obviously in flux due to the amount of oil. Now, we're not driven strictly by royalty oil anymore because of the POMV formula, which draws from the earnings. It is affected, but it is not as badly affected as it would be if we were, as we were previously on straight oil revenue, you know, good months and bad months, et cetera, et cetera. But even with what we have right now, the price of oil, when they figured the budget, the price of oil that they used was $63 a barrel. Currently, I think the last time I saw it, it was at 26. So, I mean, you could just effectively say that we're going to receive this year about one third the revenue that we would have received in the past. And that means that your $1.5 billion deficit or $1.4 billion deficit is now definitely probably going to be reaching closer to $2 billion. So, I mean, the numbers, because there's some offsets and some other things that go in there, and it is hard. Probably the two best people that I've seen come up with some serious numbers are economist Ed King, where you can find him at King Economics Group. He's got several pieces on this. And then Brad Keithley from Alaskans for Sustainable Budgets. He also has been doing a lot of writing, and he has laid this out in like 5-year graph forms to show where things are going. But essentially, you know, we're upside down by $1 billion. Even with a flat budget moving forward, we would be upside down by $1 billion a year plus moving forward, even with a flat budget. And we all know that that is not happening. I mean, this budget was a flat budget that the governor put out, and they still added 370 something million dollars to it. So, I mean, it's pretty tough, but those numbers are kind of a moving target right now.
Mike, on the tourism, I've heard June 1st is kind of when they're for sure going to be closed until, and then there is a chance that we'll get some late cruise ships, probably not completely full, and there's an issue with the ports in Canada as well. So
right.
I think that's also just not looking good. But yeah, I would say that, you know, it surprises me that some of the stuff that you just talked about is even on the table with all the, you know, you would think that you cut all the fat, right?
And
you just,
right.
You know, you go down to bare bones, and we just need more people to get involved, Mike, because people are scared. They're not watching, and slip all this stuff into us and give us the bill later.
Yeah.
Well, so have a good day. Thanks.
Appreciate it, Rich. Thank you so much. The governor did cut quite a bit of the fat that they put back in. He did cut that out yesterday in his budget announcement. He cut close to $300 million out, but he just cut it out from the state spending side. He did announce that they are going to use a lot of this CARES money, this federal relief money, to spend on those things. He's just not taking it out of UGF. So overall actual spend will be the same. It'll still be the, you know, flat plus another $300 million and change. It'll just be the feds picking up the $300 million and change instead. You know, the question is the size and scope of state government, does it have the ability to shrink down as the private economy is doing? The answer is probably yes, but the will to do it is a definite no. Let's go over here to your phone calls. Good morning. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
This is Lee in Fairbanks.
Good morning, Lee. What's on your mind, sir?
I got to make it quick, but people that have CERC pumps on their water distribution system, either in North Pole or Fairbanks or even in College Utilities, they got to plug their CERC pumps in. I had a call this morning, and that was his problem. He's totally clueless about anything going on in the world, but that there's people like that out there, and they're going to just cause the system to go down when those things thaw out and they're broken.
Right.
This guy was lucky. He caught it in the first day.
Right.
That's all I got to say, Michael, and keep smiling.
All right. Well, Lee, thank you so much for the heads up and the warning. We appreciate it. It's Problem Corner right here on KFAR 660 AM. Let me go back to this article here from Andrew Jensen in the Alaska Journal of Commerce. Here's how the article starts out. Where did it go? I'm sorry, I got the wrong. Here we go. Have you ever been to villages at dividend time? This was the question posed to me during a call from House Finance Co-Chair Jennifer Johnston. That morning, I had published an opinion column chiding the legislature for failing to utilize the permanent fund to help Alaskans during the worst economic crisis in the state's history by first canceling the Senate-approved supplemental dividend and then refusing to move up the distribution of the traditional annual payment to provide for immediate relief. First, she asked him how long he'd live in Alaska. Apparently, 10 years was not very long. And then asked him if he was familiar with state finances. I mean, this is Andrew Jensen, who's been covering these things for years. But, you know, I guess good question, right? I mean, no arrogance there. She then asked that question at the top of the piece. Have you ever been to villages at dividend time? Without ever asking to go off the record, Johnston went on to state that part of the reasoning for not paying the dividend early was because it would be too much money in rural Alaska on top of the federal payment that was approved in the CARES Act. She further claimed the congressional delegation actually discouraged the legislature from paying a spring dividend because they shared the same concerns. Representatives from Don Young, Lisa Murkowski, and Dan Sullivan's offices all denied such a message was conveyed to the legislature, either by them or members of their staff. Unequivocally deny, says Dan Sullivan's director of communications, Mike Anderson. He said, furthermore, no one in our office, including Senator Sullivan, holds such offensive views. In Johnson's view, quote, social services would be overwhelmed in the villages and elsewhere if Alaskans were to receive their 2020 dividend now instead of in October. You read that right. A key member of the legislative leadership and the conference committee that crafted the state budget did not favor even paying the PFD early because certain people may not spend it wisely. I mean, this... Wow. If I was running against Jennifer Johnston, this would be the headline of every mailer, every you know, television ad, every radio ad that I put out there, was that we are just not smart enough to spend our own money. In addition to that, her fellow Anchorage Republican and co-chair of rules, Chuck Kopp, who's also some would say a turncoat Republican member of this majority, wrote an op-ed claiming the leadership was being quote-unquote smart and strategic with their budgeting, which is evidently not qualities that Alaskans possess themselves on how to choose how they would use that early distribution of the dividend. Before we get too much far along here, I just want to say this is madness. I mean, I don't want to interject myself too much, but I'm a little worked up over this. This is madness. That you have politicians who not only feel this way, but just say it out loud and shake their head and scratch their heads about why you're upset about it. I mean, it is just totally, totally astonishing. I want to hear what you have to say on this. Are you okay with this? Because this is not just Jennifer Johnston. This is Chuck Kopp. This is Bart Lebon. This is Steve Thompson. This is all the members of the majority that are there. This is the attitude that they have for all of these things. And that's a sad thing to say. It's very frustrating. We're going to continue ahead. Don't go anywhere. It's Problem Corner right here on KFAR 660 AM. News and conversation. Also at 97.5 FM and at KFARradio.com. How is the binding caucus put into law? Was it voted on by the previous legislation? If so, why can't legislators use the Supreme Court's ruling and not being bound by previous legislators when they try to cut them off? These are rules, Joe. These are House rules that are put into place by legislators. They're not statutes. They're parliamentary rules that they place on themselves. They could be removed by themselves. What Mike Schauer is attempting to do, Senator Mike Schauer, is attempting to put into statute, into legal language, to make it illegal to have these rules in the House. The statute would trounce the House rules. But that's not going anywhere right now, other than we're getting a lot of talk about it. Harold says the fishery may shut down in Bristol Bay. Yeah, I saw that this morning. It's a very real possibility. Oil will crater if this virtual meeting fails into the teens and for a long time. Conoco has announced they're stacking out all the drilling rigs. Lots of people are going to be on LOA, leave without, is what that, leave with LOA. That's going to long-term layoff, right? The state of Alaska should backstop and fund Conoco's capital projects to zero interest with an agreement to pick it up over the next 3 years' production taxes with a grant if they increase production, says Harold. Juno is spending our money wisely. Yeah, like Juno is spending our money wisely, says Sybil. Yeah. The legislature lecturing us on how to spend wisely? Seriously? Yeah, Tyler. I mean, just read this article. Where's the article? Read this article, man. Just read it. Read the whole thing. And then come back to me and tell me that you just are not, your eyeballs are just not spitting out blood. That's where I was at. Just spitting out blood when I read this thing. I was like, what the actual, I mean, what? Oh, man. And you guys need to go read Ed King's article, by the way, too. If you haven't read this article from Ed King, The Death of the Permanent Fund Dividend, it's a deep, deep read. You need to go read this, like, right away. This piece is just fascinating, full of details. And it goes into some stuff. You need to read this one as well. We're going to try and talk to Ed King about that maybe later this week or first part of next week. But you should be reading that one as well. 15 seconds out now. We're going to take some phone calls. We're going to jump back into it. It is the Michael Duke Show. Nope, it's Problem Corner right here on KFAR 660 AM. News and conversation. Here we go. Like this video. Share the show. Welcome back to Problem Corner, right here on KFAR, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. We're also simulcasting Problem Corner, by the way, on Facebook. If you haven't had a chance to go out and check this out, we're on Facebook Live. And best way to do that is just go to facebook.com/localtalkradio/live. facebook.com/localtalkradio/live. And you'll find the video there. And we've got a chat room going on. We've got about 30 people in there hanging out with us this afternoon or this morning, talking about things and getting the full rundown. So, yeah, if you were not upset by what's going on here, man, I got so heated this morning during my own broadcast talking about this, because to me this is just, it's just so blatantly offensive that people are, just so arrogant with everything that you've got going on. Well, the governor came out yesterday in his press conference and he announced the full budget with a list of vetoes. And I got to tell you, the vetoes are got some pretty interesting things in them. And I want to talk a little bit about that. So we're going to break into that and talk a little bit about it right now. The governor vetoed a big chunk of the additional funds that the legislature put into the budget. And those funds include COVID community assistance, regional education, the school bond debt reimbursement, the Anchorage response grant, one-time education, that $30 million that they plugged in there on top of everything else outside the formula, a homelessness grant, and a non-mandatory municipal debt reimbursement. Those are just a few of the things right off the top of the list here that he vetoed out, saying that most of this stuff would be provided for through the CARES Act, the Federal Coronavirus Relief Act. We're going to get into some more details on this as we move ahead, but let's go over to the phones and take your calls. Good morning. Who's this?
Hello, this is Charles.
Good morning, Charles. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm just thinking about, you know, Richardson Highway, saying, you know, people here looking at the Richardson, there's like one car for every 10 that used to be and stuff, pretty dead. But the point I'm trying to bring up is the F-35s, like, we had a bunch of government borough employees promoting that, and I wonder where they are now. And I don't see the military moving anybody anywhere right now.
No, I mean, I think if you're waiting on the F-35s to be your saving grace, you're going to be waiting a little bit longer with everything that's going on. I agree with that. I said that 5 years ago when I left, they were talking about the F-35s were just around the corner. They were going to come in anytime. Right. That was 5 years ago.
Yeah. Highway's empty.
Yeah. All right, Charles. I appreciate you calling in. Thank you for sounding off on Problem Corner this morning. Again, 503-298-4540, 503-298-4540, if you would like to sound off and have your voice be heard on this, if you want to talk about the arrogance of politicians and Jennifer Johnson's comments or anything else, we'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Back to the governor's vetoes, the governor also vetoed $31 million in Medicaid funding. That Medicaid funding, according to Adam Crum, who's one of the governor's commissioners, he said that money is already actually in there because of the CARES Act. The federal match through the Coronavirus Response Act was actually increased by about 6.5%. And so you're going to see that money offset anyway. One of the biggies, though, was the veto of the earnings reserve transfer to the corpus. The legislature, the leadership wanted to transfer $1 billion out of the earnings reserve account and put it in the corpus, which would make it inaccessible for us to be able to use in times of crisis. I mean, in the middle of a crisis like this, and they're complaining about not having money and doing this and doing that, they were going to transfer $1 billion in there. The governor put a stop to that. So that's an interesting point that I'm glad that he did. I was hoping he would, and he did so. Let's go back to the phones to get your thoughts. Good morning. You're on Problem Corner. Who's this?
Hey, good morning. This is Joseph.
Good morning, Joseph.
Hey, I know you guys are always throwing names out there, all these people that are doing all the crappy-ass things for Alaskans and everything like that. I was wondering if it's possible or if there's a reason why you couldn't do it is say, you know, John Doe and his party affiliation, whatever that is. So you kind of get an idea, you know, about the, if it's one party that's doing it or if it's just individuals or whatnot.
Sure. I mean, we could do that. I do that frequently on my own show. I will tell you, Joseph, that this really is not a party affiliation issue. Jennifer Johnston is a Republican. You know, you've got Bert Stedman is the one that pulled the shenanigans on the Senate side by holding the COVID funding hostage. He's a Republican. You got the Democrat, Bryce Edgemond, who's the speaker or the minority or the majority leader in the House. He is, a Democrat. This is bipartisan. This is not a left or a right problem. This is not a Republican or a Democratic problem. This is a politician problem. That is the bottom line there, Joseph. Thank you so much for your call. Let's go over here. Good morning. Who's this?
This is Mel.
Hello, Mel. What's on your mind?
Actually, I just read during my morning news perusal online that the F-35s are on schedule to arrive. So,
When are they expected to arrive, Mel?
Well, I don't know. Whenever they were expected before, that they haven't. It hasn't been delayed. That's just what it said. I didn't have a lot of detail, but it was in one of the, you know, routine Alaskan
right.
publications.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mel. I appreciate it. As I said earlier, they've been telling us. They were telling me before I left that was right around the corner. So that's a thing. Trying to get a hard nailed down date is kind of a difficult thing right now. But it's good to know that they're still on track for whenever that is going to be.
That's true.
Good morning. Who's this? You're on Problem Corner.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Lucy, and I'm calling from Two Rivers.
Good morning, Lucy. What's on your mind?
Oh, I've been listening to you, and I do listen to you early in the morning and really enjoy the programs that are on our radio station. Anyway, I wanted to talk about the natives in the villages that are so, I guess, called stupid and dumb and whatnot.
Right.
Most of the families are so either behind on their bills from credits from the grocery store they have, or when they do get it, they buy outboard motors or snow machines, which is their main transportation
right.
during the summer or during the winter.
Right.
But I have a lot more to say, but thank you for letting me say a few words for those people.
Well, Lucy, thank you for listening, and thank you for giving us your viewpoint on this. And like I said, I mean, I don't agree with that, and I think you're right. I think they're using it more for living than anything untowards, as she seems to say. Thank you for your call. Let's go over here. Good morning. You're on Problem Corner. Who's this?
Hey, Michael.
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
It's John Reese. How you doing, man?
Brother John, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. You know, when you stand next to me, I make you look like a little debutante.
I know. I feel good when you stand next to me.
Hey, dude, I got $1,000 that says you won't file for office. And if I lose, good for me.
$1,000 that says you won't file for office. Huh? I'm not going to take that bet, my friend.
No, I tell you, I will bet you $1,000 you won't file for office. If you do, we all win, my friend.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I got to tell you, John, I have considered that many times, and I consistently said this. This is just my opinion, and you can sound off on it, but my opinion is that I can do more good here on the outside, pointing to all the things that are going on, all the things that are happening, all the things that are going wrong, than I could as one of 60 trying to make a mess down in there. Because you could see how they could take one person, like a Mike Schauer. He and I are very much alike in personality. They could take a one person and they can corner him. And he's still being as effective as he can be. But I feel like I can be a lot more effective shining the light out here than I could be on the inside. You know, my question is, why isn't Representative John Reeves on the ballot?
Oh, dude, because I'm out here making wagers.
Yeah, there you go. John, thank you so much, my friend. It's good to talk with you. Thank you for calling in. Folks, we are out of time for today. That's the end of the show for today. Thanks for being part of it. We will continue with this tomorrow. It'll be Shooter's Corner right here on KFAR. Oh, man. Don't wish that on me. Don't wish that on me at all. Oh, hey, look, you guys are getting a look behind the scenes there at all my cartwall and stuff. Thanks for coming in, folks. Thanks, sir. Thanks for being part of it. I can't talk about it without cussing, says Robin. So I'll just listen. I felt that way this morning, Robin. I know. I'm going to tell you. I see exactly why. You're as mad as you are. Thank you for being part of it. Ron says, yes, stay behind the mic. You're doing more than we ever could. I mean, I just feel like this is the best and highest use of my time. I really do. And quite honestly, I just don't want to go to jail. That's kind of the second reason for that. Thank you very much for being part of it right here on Problem Corner. Don't forget, tomorrow morning, we're going to be jumping back into it. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Reason Magazine contributor J.D. Tuchilli, who's going to be joining us, talking about the authoritarianism that we're seeing popping out across America with his shutdown. We talked a little bit about it. We talked about it with the North Slope Borough trying to seize all the assets of Raven. We talked about it in New York, where de Blasio wants to draft people and conscript them, medical workers, to come to New York. We've talked about this authoritarianism. We're going to have a conversation about that tomorrow with J.D. Tuchilli in the first hour. And I'm working on somebody else for hour two. So make sure you stick around and join us then. We'll be broadcasting starting at 6 a.m. Thank you for being part of it. KFAR 660 AM News and Comment. It is Problem Corner right here We will see you tomorrow morning for the Michael Duke Show.